So we will proceed. Chris Coburn, Dan Abers, and then Kaya Freeman, Jim Curlin, Tim Eichenberg, Linda Sheehan, and about five or six more. So everybody will have 3 minutes.
Hopefully I'll take less than that. I just want to preface my comments by saying that I'm involved in this on both a personal and professional level. I spend a great deal of time in the waters off the Monterey coast, and so I have a personal stake in this as well as my professional stake being with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. So I should say Chris Coburn with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Urban Watch and First Flush monitoring programs that the sanctuary has conducted along with the cities of Monterey and Pacific Grove. I'd be further remiss if I didn't mention that we have a proposal in under the consolidated grants to work with the different jurisdictions on the Monterey coast to further monitor urban outfalls in the Monterey Peninsula. And we are formatting that in a way that we could hopefully get some feedback on how effective these stormwater programs are being. So it's a little bit of shameless plug for our proposal. But essentially, those programs monitor the effluent from storm drains from Monterey to Pacific, or from Monterey actually up in through Santa Cruz and even further more recently. And that's in partnership with many of the cities and also the Coastal Watershed Council in Santa Cruz. A reference was made earlier to warring parties, and that's essentially what I think we're getting to here, and that's my concern, is that in my comments last year, I mentioned how polarized this issue has become, and I'm continuing to feel that this polarization is expanding, and my concern is that we're really not making progress, and I feel, and from the sanctuary standpoint, that we see two options right now. And the first option is one that we have supported, which is authorizing or adopting coverage of the Monterey Regional Stormwater Program under the general permit. And that way we can use the annual reports as a mechanism for feedback on how we're doing in our progress, or how the cities are doing in the progress on this project. The second option is recognizing that this is not a very good forum for discussion and exchange of ideas and discussion on why things work. I saw a great conversation here with Fred Muir and folks from the NRDC, and I think that's where we really need to head. If you do not choose to adopt this stormwater program today, I would submit that we really need to get some forum, whether it be hosted by the regional board, whether it be hosted by the sanctuary, EPA, somebody where all the interested parties can sit down and sort of work out these issues, because I think there are good points on both sides of the table, but we need to begin to have a discussion where we can work these out in a very specific manner. So thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question for Chris.
Go ahead.
If I remember correctly, about a year ago you testified in front of this board on this particular permit. Mm-hmm. And wasn't the sanctuary in support of the permit at that particular time?
Yes, and we still are.
And you still are?
Yes.
And you've gone, the sanctuary staff has gone through all this? And
I have had the distinct pleasure of attending most, if not all, of the Monterey Regional Stormwater Permit Group meetings since I started with the sanctuary, which was in 2003. We've been really intimately involved, and perhaps that's why we do take the perspective that we have good faith with the jurisdictions.
I appreciate you bringing up the monitoring plans that the sanctuary has, because I would not want us to mandate monitoring plans that would duplicate the efforts that are already in place.
Yeah, I think
maybe we could enhance some of those,
but
I don't want to duplicate.
Funding is always the key. Yeah, but I agree that, you know, we do have a good program. I also wanted to mention along the lines of the sea otter discussion, there's an excellent researcher, and I think that the doctor who's written most of the papers on the issue is Dr. Melissa Miller. She's out of Santa Cruz. She is a wealth of information on the subject, and should you want more information, and she does discuss management from time to time with respect to her research, and I would encourage
you. I think
you.
We've had some of those documents to the regional board from time to time,
okay.
Maybe not all together, but I think we've received some of her work over a period of time.
Okay.
I think that the sea otter infection issue is important.
Absolutely.
And I don't think just a public education program is sufficient, in my mind, for addressing this. I think it's a prominent issue, and I think it needs something that you know, gets beneath the layers a little bit deeper in what's being proposed. Can your monitoring proposals be enhanced to include something that includes...
I'm not sure if there was a proposal submitted specifically for T. Gandhi.
Yeah, I don't think there was, but I'm wondering...
We traditionally have not monitored for that because it is, and we've actually met and talked with Melissa Miller or Dr. Miller about that exact idea and getting a handle on what is the source of the T. Gandhi. But it's my understanding from our discussions with her that it's not a very simple procedure to test for the protozoan in water quality samples. And that's where we hit the stumbling block, that it's difficult to test for the protozoan. It's also, the protozoan is a pretty super little organism in the sense that it takes a heck of a lot to kill the organism. Essentially, it's bleach that kills the organism, and so it's a subject that is very important. It's something that the sanctuary has been addressing and looking at and been concerned with for a number of years. But I think that we need to really take a thorough look at all the different aspects to the issue.
What's being proposed is, as I just stated, education to the public on cat litter. So, I mean, how do you even monitor the success of that BMP in and of itself?
Yeah, I think we struggle with that. I mean, I don't want to get off the subject of T. Gandhi, but you think about some of the constituents and some of the pollutants that we see in our waterways, and they're absolutely pegged. You know, nitrates in certain areas, pegged being at very high levels. And so we get to a point where starting to evaluate management becomes difficult, because at what point is it a historic plug of a pollutant moving down a waterway versus additional new pollutants coming in that waterway? And so I think that there are success measures that we can implement with respect to monitoring on, we've done some work with the city of Monterey, for instance, where we've actually gone upstream into the watershed to try and track down sources of metals. And you can do that on a small scale, and I think there's also other where water monitoring is either difficult or we're going to need a longer period of time to see that success, we're going to need some sort of programmatic metrics to evaluate the success of the program.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Dan, is it Albers or Ivory? Okay.
Chairman Young, Water Board members and staff, I'm Deanne Albers, Executive Director of Friends of the Sea Otter, and I'm representing California Sierra Club's Great Coastal Places campaign. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss stormwater management. I'm kind of going to go off what I was going to say and address the cat litter problem. It's actually only the flushable cat litter that is the problem. When you flush it in the toilet, it is not the oocytes and the bacteria that's in the feces of the cats is not taken care of through the sewage treatment plan, and when it actually hits the water, it's activated. So it's only one part of the cat feces problem. In the last 2 years...
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. How do we know that? Tell me. I'm interested.
Well, because a lot of it is Dr. Miller's work, but it has been documented, and the other problem is the cat feces of feral and outside cats and opossum feces comes directly from stormwater runoff. So, and that was documented. It was the opossum feces in Morro Bay that killed the 64 sea otters, and it is known and been documented. So it is a fact that it is the oocyte in the feces of the opossum that killed the otters in Morro Bay, and it is very similar to what is in cat feces that are feral cats and outside cats, and then it's the inside cats with the flushable cat litter that can't be treated through the sewage treatment plant. So that's kind of a very brief, and there's other sea otter people here that can elaborate more on that. And if I could just take 1 minute to address something that was brought up earlier as to why we are protecting the Monterey Bay. And the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, our nation's largest marine sanctuary, which is home to 33 species of marine mammals 94 species of seabirds, 345 species of fishes, 4 species of sea turtles, and more than 400 species of marine algae. All of these species rely on clean water to survive. Included in the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary's marine diversity, there are 26 species that receive special protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act, including species such as the California brown pelican and the southern sea otter, that are known to be at particular risk from waterborne pollutants. Monterey County also contains 5 offshore areas of special biological significance, numerous coastal state parks, and state beaches that attract over 5.7 million visitors each year. Maintaining clean coastal waters is critical to protecting the health of both the species that inhabit the Monterey Bay Sanctuary and Monterey County's nearly $2 billion a year coastal tourism industry. The activities that occur on land and watersheds that drain to the sanctuary have a direct impact on the bay. And that just kind of talks about why we're working so hard on this, and I won't go into the rest of the things that we were saying.
Well, how do you feel about what's been proposed?
We are definitely in favor of the NRDC proposed amendment, and we're very thankful that the EPA submitted that letter as well.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries?
Yeah, I just had a quick question because you alluded to sewage disposal.
Correct.
Is that including tertiary facilities
yes.
as well? Also?
Also.
Okay, thanks.
It does not destroy the oocyte and the bacteria.
Is there some scientific document that says that?
Yes. I believe it would be Melissa Miller's paper, and there may be other papers as well that document that. It's a known fact, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kaya Freeman, and then Jim Curlin.
Hello, thank you. I'm Kaya Freeman, Central Coast Regional Manager for the Surfrider Foundation. Thanks for this opportunity. Surfrider began 20 years ago, winning a lawsuit on a water quality case in Malibu, and water quality remains a priority for our chapters, nationwide and locally. We regret not being able to send written comment earlier, the draft documents, but we're pleased that Monterey is finally getting a stormwater management plan and pleased with your careful consideration of the amendments to the revised plan. Surfrider has 50,000 members who use the ocean recreationally and commercially, who value healthy coastal waters free of pollutants, and believe it is a public right to safely access these waters. Approximately 3,000 of our members are in the Central Coast and access the Monterey Bay waters on a regular basis. Therefore, this management plan is critically important to our mission to protect coastal waters from pollution, educate our communities on how to do so, and work with agencies to understand the stakes involved. What washes down our waterways and off our pavement threatens not only the enjoyment of our coast, but threatens the health of humans and wildlife. And there was a question as to where are these priority areas. You could look to surfers, otters, ASBSs, and the Marine Life Protection Act that currently is being enacted in the Central Coast. Today, we voice support for the amended resolution presented to you by NRDC and the Ocean Conservancy that highlights additional and measurable protections that are inadequately addressed in the revised plan. Of particular concern is the lack of measurable criteria for pollution prevention for municipal operations, specifically the inadequate street cleaning and storm drain cleaning programs. Schedules for regular street cleaning based on traffic load should be required throughout the county, and storm drains, the last stop before entering the ocean, must be managed rigorously. Winter and spring conditions bring great diversity of seabirds and mammals to the bay, and great swells that attract surfers from across the world. So increased maintenance of these storm drains during the wet season can reduce overflows that seriously pollute our waters and have been linked to 6 surfers in the winter. I just want to tell you, the Monterey chapter is currently planning a campaign plastic debris elimination program that tackles one of these land-based pollutants harming our oceans that is correctable and measurable. Science studies show us that half of the plankton in the Pacific Ocean is actually plastic, and that dissected seabirds show up with bellies full of plastic, and that offshore gyres of floating plastic are miles wide in the Pacific Ocean. So we target businesses in Monterey County to reduce the use and distribution of disposable plastic, but that's only one part of the solution. And your monitoring enforcement program is imperative. So we don't think you can do it alone, and we'd just like to request that out the gate you set and require strong standards for this management plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Curlin, followed by Tim Eichenberg.
Good afternoon, Chairman Young, Water Board members and staff. My name is Jim Curlin, and I'm the Marine Program Associate for Defenders of Wildlife. On behalf of Defenders representing over 490,000 members and supporters across the nation, with 100,000 or nearly one quarter of that membership in California, and specifically 1,000 of those members and supporters residing in Monterey County, we submit the following statement. When our members are polled on issues that are important to them, marine issues continually rank high, and this mirrors the public sentiment and certainly that of most Californians. To begin with, Defender supports Natural Resources Defense Council's proposed amended resolution. In addition, Defender supports the conclusions of a letter dated February 8th from the Chief of the Environmental Protection Agency's Water Division. Specifically, because of Defender's work in advocating for stronger and more water quality programs, we would like to address the lack of a monitoring program in the Water Board staff's proposed resolution. For several years now, Defenders has been using the sea otter as a key indicator for ocean health, as you've been hearing about, to illustrate the inadequate water quality monitoring programs in California. Either you have programs like SWAMP, and in this case I mean the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program, or Muscle Watch, that are potentially great programs that are just barely hanging on but providing little or no useful data, or you have a lack of monitoring programs for pollutants such as biological pathogens that have been shown to have a dramatic impact on the southern sea otter population, which you've heard a lot about, so I won't go into. Stormwater runoff is commonly known to be the most significant water pollution threat statewide, and the Monterey region is no exception. These inputs may be detrimental to sea otters and other marine life. Any stormwater management plan must not only have a monitoring program, but one that effectively assesses inputs into the ocean and their levels. With sea otters and humans sharing similar food tastes, this is a human health issue as well. With sea otters dying from diseases they get from food they consume, it's a crime, and as Ms. Strauss indicated, it's negligent not to be monitoring water quality. In closing, we would like to reiterate that the proposed program does not go far enough to incorporate specific measures that would protect water quality on the Monterey Peninsula, and only NRDC's proposed amended resolution adequately addresses the deficiencies in the Water Board staff's current proposed resolution. I just want to add, I have copies of this, but there's been a lot of talk about T. gondii and the cat litter, but the fact is, if you talk to people like Dr. Miller, Dr. Jessup, Dr. Pat Conrad, who's over at UC Davis, there's a lot of things other than T. gondii that are coming from land to sea that are affecting sea otters, things like San Joaquin Valley fever. There's other bacteria, other protozoans that are just not being monitored. And we talked about T. gondii, and we're certainly behind doing something with the cat litter issue, although it's a very shaky thing because the researchers don't know the conclusive connect the dots situation. But I think that I just wanted to throw that out there, that we're not just talking about T. gondii, but a lot of other things that are affecting sea otters that have been shown to have a land-sea connection. Thank you.
So let me ask you this. What type of monitoring do you think, could be incorporated into some of the swamps in the Central Coast region with dischargers that are on the ocean?
Well, just basic water quality levels, taking water quality tests of near shore waters. But one program that I mentioned, and we've been advocating this for years, is the Muscle Watch program. Sea otters eat mussels, and that program is just like barely hanging on by a thread. And here, by monitoring mussels or like organisms, you get a sense of what they're filtering into their systems and what sea otters are in turn eating. So just having a program like Muscle Watch be a functioning program would be just one example.
Is Muscle Watch looking for Tigandia in mussels?
I don't know what the latest status of. I've talked to folks at, you know, I was a Moss Landing Marine Lab a graduate student, and I know some of the folks that have gone through the Muscle Watch program. And the last time I spoke to them, they're doing some basic stuff, but they just can't do the things that they really truly need to do because they don't have the money.
Okay, thank you. Tim Eichenberg, followed by Linda Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Tim Eichenberg, and I'm with the Ocean Conservancy. The Ocean Conservancy is very concerned with the health of the oceans, and for this reason, we work very closely with the with NRDC on that extensive report, which you're calling a white paper or pollution prevention plan that we presented to you at your request, and we shared it with the local communities. And we had very specific recommendations in our draft report, and we were very disappointed with the response to that report. We were disappointed that it excluded many common sense and practical measures that were listed not only in the report itself, but also in the MERP that we've been discussing, and also EPA guidance that's readily available. And I don't want to say that there's been no response at all to our report. There were some changes that were made to the revised permit. There were some new protocols that were added. But we feel that we're very disappointed that the quality of these do not reach the level that we think the board should be approving today. We're also disappointed that many of the specific recommendations were dismissed with very broad generalities, things that said permittees are not required to implement all BMPs used in other communities, that the MEPs are very individualized and very dependent on local factors, and it's perfectly acceptable to use protocols, policies, and procedures or guidance. Those are the kinds of responses that were in the staff report to our very specific recommendations. We didn't feel these were appropriate, and I don't want to beat a dead horse any further because we've talked about what some of the inadequacies of the revised permit are. But to make just to sum up, we think that the measurable goals are very weak, especially with respect to ASBSs. We think that the monitoring programs are inadequate. The design standards in Attachment 4, we believe, should be applied to all communities. In fact, that was an original recommendation by the communities themselves, except for maybe one or two. And we also believe that the BMPs and enforceable mechanisms must be properly incorporated into the municipal procedures to make sure that they are actually implemented. Right now, it's more of a promise to do something rather than an actual commitment. And for these reasons, we urge the board to reject the proposed resolution, and we support the NRDC proposal, and we ask you to substantially strengthen the revised permit conditions. And we're ready to work in whatever way we can to try to help you do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Linda Sheehan, followed by Christine Bradley, and then Leah Rose.
Good afternoon, Chairman Young and members of the board. My name is Linda Sheehan. I'm the executive director of the California Coastkeeper Alliance, which represents waterkeepers from the Oregon border down to San Diego. I testified last year on the proposed plan. That was quick.
Time's up.
Yeah, no, I talked to you about money. Oh. Money is what I want to talk to you about. And it's gotten brought up a lot today, and I would like to wrap back to money, because clean water is the lifeblood of this local economy. Ms. Strauss mentioned on the phone that the 303D list has been expanding. Actually, for Region 3, there are 80% more water bodies on the 303D list this go-around than last go-around. This problem is not going away, and it's certainly very sound financial management to be able to prudently invest in a clear, effective stormwater plan now and prevent this pollution rather than deal with the expensive cleanup costs later. The piper's going to come calling at some point, and I'd rather cut the costs if I can. More broadly, speaking of money, what's really disturbing is this sort of recurrent theme of there's no money to be able to do this. And yet staff said today that they didn't even ask for a cost analysis, costing out of an adequate program, which surprises me significantly because in this area is blessed to have Assemblymember Laird as your representative. He is the chair of the Assembly Budget Committee. He's also the co-chair of the Bond Conference Committee. They're debating billions of dollars in bond funds right now. I actually went myself to Assemblymember Laird's office a year ago to talk about money for ASBSs. And I was told by staff that they had already been approached by local folks on that very issue, not to raise money, but to actually ease the requirements, which I'm not saying anybody here necessarily did that. They're not naming names. But that's disturbing to me. Nobody in my experience time and time again in working on this issue to get money for this program has been nobody has shown up to ask other than the NGOs. So, for example, Dominic Gregorio, who sits here today from the State Water Board, and I and the Ocean Conservancy successfully worked to carve off $10 million in Prop 50 bond money, primarily for ASBSs. I went to the San Diego Board hearing, the San Diego Board hearing of the Ocean Protection Council, testified in support of this. Nobody came, just the NGOs. Right now, I'm working in the legislature on bond funding and Prop 218 reform, which can be done through a bond. Then it was mentioned earlier by the Monterey City Manager. I'm doing that. Other NGOs are doing that. I know the State Water Board is interested in that. The silence is deafening up there when it comes to trying to get money for these things. Now, I'm a mom, and I'm experienced with multitasking, and I'm even impressed by the level of multitasking that I think the NGOs are doing on this issue. We're writing the plan. We're finding money for the plan. I mean, give us some white jumpsuits and a broom, and we'll go out there and start implementing the plan. But we can't do it by ourselves. This is something that we asked the regional board to get the cities to step up and help themselves. They asked you earlier, help us get money, get the state board to get us money. I would say I'm helping. Everybody needs to help themselves. There's a lot of money out there for the taking right now, and with the political power that these cities have, there's no reason why this money shouldn't be grabbed. And how do we grab it? We grab it with a clearly written, effective, aggressively marketed stormwater plan that will actually get you to clean water. The proposal before you does not do that. And so I ask you today to please send the proposal back. You've already done that once, so let's avoid the mistakes that have been made so far. Send it back with clear instructions to require staff to specifically go through the points in the NRDC report with NRDC, the other NGOs, all the stakeholders, talk about it, and then come back within a very specific expedited time frame with the kind of plan that I and others can take to the legislature and say, fund this. This is a sound plan. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Leah Rose and then Gordon Hensley.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and the board and staff. My name is Christine Bradley, and I am actually just a citizen of Monterey. I don't belong to an organization. I am a member of Surfrider, and I'm a graduate student in Monterey, and I just wanted to come and speak to you guys about this today. I grew up swimming in the ocean off of this coast, and a lot of people that I care about now spend a lot of time in the water, and it scares me a little bit to think that poor management plan could actually affect the water quality in this region and actually make people sick. It can negatively impact the ecosystem. It can negatively impact marine mammals such as sea otters. And it can also impact our economy around here with the tourism being so important. And I love living in Monterey. I think we are so lucky to have such a beautiful and presently relatively clean environment. And I don't think we should take it for granted. I think it's something that we need to act now and implement a plan that does provide stormwater treatment in the area, or not treatment, but a management plan that will keep our oceans clean. And I want to urge you to adopt the NRDC amendments. And I'm going to make this quick because I know it's been a long day. So thank you so much for sitting through all of this and for being so stringent in your questioning of everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hensley, followed by Deborah Moll, and then Dominic Gregorio. And then lastly, Curtis Weeks. If there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak to us on this matter, please fill out a speaker card.
I did actually send my name, but that's just the opportunity.
What's that?
Leah Rose. You meant you called that name
out. Oh, yeah, pardon me.
Yeah, which one do you want first?
You know what, we'll do it this way. You're not going to tell us about Los Osos, are you, Mr. Hensley?
No. Next month. Chairman Young, Honorable Board, I'm Gordon Hensley with the San Luis Obispo Coastkeeper Program. Our territory of interest runs from the Santa Ynez Valley to Santa Cruz. I have also served on the Central Coast Regional Stakeholders Group for the Marine Life Protection Act, which is dealing with sort of the other end of the discussion that you're having right now. We heard a lot from the Monterey area fishermen, very concerned about stormwater runoff and the impacts on their businesses and the biodiversity in the bay. I would like to acknowledge the tremendous amount of work and money that's apparently been spent by the cities on generating the plan. However, the point of the plan is to achieve compliance with the stormwater regulations, and in addition to provide your board with necessary information to assure the people of California that compliance is actually being achieved. And by training, I'm a biologist, and so I don't have any opinion on the legal adequacy of the document, but reading it through, I'm very concerned that I don't see any real measurable change in the environment resulting from this plan. Sort of the so what factor that, you know, it's a really nice report, it's going to go on a shelf somewhere, look great, what's going to really happen out in the environment. And as I've mentioned to you before as a board, your board and staff demonstrate incredible patience and graciousness toward the dischargers. However, you are the regulatory body. You do have enforcement duties, and the plan is currently presented, as we've reviewed it, falls short of providing real commitments to provide improved water quality. And I would like to read a section from the EPA letter that highlights this. The proposed MRSWMP generally does not include meaningful, measurable goals. For example, the MRSWMP commits to provide outreach to 75 restaurants, inspect 5% of restaurant automotive facilities per year, and inspect 100% of the RV parks and marinas per year. However, the commitment to inspect 5% of the restaurant automotive facility equates to only 1 to 2 inspections for Sand City, 4 inspections for Pacific Grove, 16 inspections for Monterey, etc. The low level of measurable goals does not appear to add up to developing, implementing, and enforcing an effective stormwater management program. I urge your support of the NRDC proposed resolution. At a minimum, I would ask that you follow up on the EPA suggestions that supplemental material be provided. And as a point of clarification, is the EPA letter in, out? Do we need to read it into the record?
Well, we haven't decided yet what to do about that.
And
but if we continue the hearing, then the letter just will come in, so it won't be an issue.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, Ms. Rose, that I jumped ahead of myself there.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Leah Rose, and I'm the policy manager for the Otter Project. Thank you for accepting public comments today on the Monterey Regional Stormwater Management Program. The proposed management program is inadequate and unacceptable, and we urge you to reject it because it fails to outline a clear and comprehensive plan for controlling urban stormwater runoff. Considering that the Monterey region is projected to grow by 21% in this decade, a specific and effective management plan is essential for controlling stormwater pollution. Stormwater is a primary source of coastal pollution, yet the proposed plan provides no meaningful commitment to effectively control the amount of pollution that enters the marine environment. In order to protect that environment, human health, and our lucrative coastal economy, a strong stormwater management plan must be in place. Growing evidence supports the link between human environmental disturbances and emerging infectious diseases in wildlife populations. Contaminants and pathogens that enter the marine environment are known to accumulate in marine life with mortal consequences. The southern sea otter, a charismatic creature that draws tourists to this area, a sensitive indicator of nearshore marine ecosystem health, and a species listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, is struggling to grow as a population. This is due to high rates of mortality. In fact, infectious diseases contribute to the death of 38.5% of all the otters that die in each year, and most of them are prime-age breeding adults. Studies indicate that these sea otter deaths are caused by parasites and bacteria of human and or domestic animal origins, most likely entering the nearshore marine environment via surface runoff. Stormwater is teeming with harmful pathogens and chemicals, and trends in the mortality of the southern sea otter clearly show the detrimental effects. The Otter Project urges you to ultimately adopt a more detailed regional stormwater management plan, a plan that clearly outlines programs and procedures to reduce the discharge of pollutants, a plan that has measurable outcomes, a plan that strives to protect the marine environment that our coastal economy is so dependent on, a plan that will give the sea otters a healthier place to live and for humans to recreate. The Otter Project recommends moving forward with this issue by adopting the NRDC proposed amendment being put forth today. Thank you again for considering our comments, and we look forward to a plan that promotes the overall health of this unique coastal and marine environment so that local citizens and visitors alike can continue to admire and cherish it.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank
you. Okay, Deborah Moll, followed by Dominic Gregorio, and then lastly, Curtis Weeks.
Good evening, Chair Young and other board members. My name is Deborah Mall, and I'm the city attorney for the city of Monterey. And it's worth noting that I'm the only attorney here representing the permittees. And I'm just a small-town attorney. I'm not a big expert in stormwater because I have to do so many other things. And I'm not a high-powered lawyer from L.A. that's come here today to attack or create an adversarial process here with the stormwater plan. Instead, I'm here to try to arrive at some kind of compromise so we can walk out the door with a permit today.
But you're not suggesting Mr. Beckman fits that characterization, are you?
Well, I guess my point is I don't know that we need a lot of lawyers here from Los Angeles to attack us in this process. I think what we need is some kind of compromise so we can walk out the door today with a permit. We've been working, last year I was here, and we received directions from the board on how to revise our plan, and we've been working with staff all year round, and your staff came to you today and they said that our swamp complies with the MEPs. And they also told us that they told you that the swamp complies with the NRDC white paper. And then we have the NRDC that came today, and you know, first of all, they attacked staff, and in particular, they attacked the statement that Mr. Lodge made that there was no MEP analysis. And I don't think that is what Mr. Lodge meant to say. And I think my understanding of the MEP is that it's an ongoing process. This is a plan to make a plan. That's what the swamp is intended to be. And that's why you want us to walk out today with a permit, because every year it gets a review, and staff's going to sit down with us, and they're going to look at our MEPs, and they're going to say, well, what have you done? How much money have you spent? What kind of effect are you getting from that? Maybe we should do some more monitoring. Perhaps they'll say, maybe your money's better directed in this avenue, because I think you can get better results. That's why you should send us home with the permit today, so we can start this process. And being a city attorney, I realize how invaluable the public process is. And I'm very happy today that all these people are concerned, because I love the ocean too and I kayak. But there's nobody on the Central Coast right now that has a permit. And we'd be the first one. And don't you think, Surf Rider or Friends of the Otter, that you'd be better served by us having a permit here today and then working with us in the process, working with us on the yearly review? I invite you. I invite the NRDC to work with us and look at what we're doing and look at the money we're spending. Ms. Sheehan, we can't get money till we have a plan. We simply can't. So what purpose does it serve today to attack our plan? I think we need to go home with the permit. And I really resent the fact that the NRDC came here today and they gave you an amendment at the last minute, because all the environmental groups have testified to seeing this amendment and supporting it, and we didn't have it. We were sitting here before all through the meeting, and Ms. Jawar did not even present it to us until the time she was presenting it to you. And I don't feel like that is working together with the NRDC. That's sandbagging us, so we don't have an opportunity to review what's there, and staff doesn't have an opportunity to review what's there. We don't have an opportunity to do an environmental analysis or an economic analysis, and I would like to work with them within the context of our swamp. I think it's important to note that we are phase two. We're in phase two, and the phase one applications don't apply to us. I mean, we have in our swamp, we've gone beyond MEPs that are required for us, but the staff has to work within the constraints of a phase two permit. And if Mr. Beckman is comparing our permit to Los Angeles or San Diego, of course it would be inadequate, because they have to do a lot more than we do. Finally, regarding the ASBS issue, one of the things that we're agreeing to do today is to go with Attachment 4, which, as a city of our size, we wouldn't have to do Attachment 4 for our watersheds areas dumping into the ASBSs. We wouldn't have to do that, but we're agreeing as a BMP today to protect the ASBS further, and that helps all the environmental groups. It's something that we wouldn't be required to do unless we walk out of the door with a permit today. So we should be supported in that effort. And finally, I just want to note that I think there's a lot of confusion about the ASBS law, and I know this has kind of gone through the wayside in testimony, but I really urge the State Board to remove the findings that are there and give the State Board a chance to rule on what is required for us for ASBSs. And we'll be glad to step back to the plate as soon as we get those rules and implement those in our swamp. But until we have something, I don't really think that we should be jumping on board with staff's analysis. I mean, as Dr. Press mentioned earlier on in the hearing, staff's not rulemakers. And the regional board's not empowered to make those rules. It's the State Board. So let's wait till they come down and tell us what to do with the ASBSs, and we'll be glad to comply. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Small, what's your reaction to EPA's letter that came in yesterday and was somewhat critical, at least, of what has been put before us at this point? And I think they've made some credible comments.
Well, sir, I note that in the last paragraph of that letter, they contrast us to Los Angeles. And as was stated on the phone, the monitoring requirements are not requirements for Phase 2 permits. My response is the same thing that Mr. Muir said earlier. We wish we would have seen this letter and had the opportunity to work with it. But there's so many years have passed that we've been working on the swamp. And to just get this on the last day, I mean, I wonder what kind of analysis has gone into it and why your staff didn't have this so earlier on in the process so they can work with us to implement some of these. So I don't, you know, I'm suspicious of this last-minute letter coming in and it just addressing concerns raised by the NRDC. I wish I would have had it earlier so my staff could do a better analysis of it and your staff could do a better analysis of it.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. No more speaker cards.
One more.
We do?
Yeah, you called it.
Oh, yeah. Dominic Gregorio, then Curtis Weeks. Sorry about that.
Good afternoon, Chairman Young and members of the board. For the record, my name is Dominic Gregorio. I'm a senior environmental scientist. I work for the State Water Board, and I manage the Ocean Unit. The Ocean Unit is responsible for the Ocean Plan and the areas of special biological significance. Basically, I'm here to give you an update on the State Board's activities with regard to areas of special biological significance, if you would like that, or to answer any questions that you have regarding that subject. So if you'd like, I can give you a quick update, if that's your pleasure.
Go ahead.
The Ocean Plan is the existing regulation with regard to the areas of special biological significance, and in fact, all ocean discharges. There are really two ways to comply with the Ocean Plan in that regard. One is to comply with an absolute prohibition on waste discharges. I think Mr. Muir mentioned that earlier. The other option is to comply with the exception process in the Ocean Plan. The exception process requires that if an exception is granted, it would have to be in the public interest, and in this case, it would be, for example, the protection against flooding, and beneficial uses must also be protected. Ocean water quality must be protected, in other words. The Public Resources Code also has very special requirements for areas of special biological significance, which are also state water quality protection areas. And there are a special subset of those areas that require, and I quote, special protections. So when we look at the exception process at the State Board, we're looking at the development of these special protections, the conditions that would limit stormwater discharges, and specifically the wastes that are present in the stormwater discharges. It is true that the State Board has had workshops in the recent past. We've actually had three workshops, one in La Jolla, one in Monterey, and the last one in San Pedro. And we've also had proceedings with regard to two exceptions, one for the Scripps Institution of Oceanography and the other for the University of Southern California, and those are specifically into areas of special biological significance. So we have had some recent activity with regard to that. In fact, the State Board will consider the exception for USC at its February 15th meeting next week. Staff is currently working on developing a draft set of special protections for stormwater discharges, and we hope to come out with that draft set of special protections this spring and provide that to a stakeholder group. And just to give you some idea of where we're going with those, generally we would like to, at the staff level, of course this is something we'll eventually propose to our board, at the staff level, we'd like to see a cessation of dry weather flows. We'd like to see the cleanup of stormwater flows through the iterative process, with the permit and the stormwater management plan being the major way that the regional boards work with the dischargers along those lines. And monitoring is very important, and in order to determine if natural water quality is protected in an ASBS, we will be proposing very specific monitoring requirements. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions that you have.
Any thoughts on what we should do with, you know, this specific plan, you know, has a portion of one of the dischargers going into an ASBS? I mean, you've been here, you've heard the discussion, so.
The fact that this may get appealed to the State Board, I have to be a little careful with how I answer that. Generally, the permit is a State Board permit, and it seems to me that the more expeditiously that permit could be applied and that a stormwater management plan be developed that would be to your satisfaction, I think that would be better in terms of, you know, protection of ocean water quality in general. And so that's just my general take on it.
Yeah, but with the current ASBS prohibition,
Right. The permit does not allow discharges into the ASBS. That's factual. It's very explicit in that it refers to state water quality protection plans, and which is the ocean plan is one of those, and that the permit cannot allow discharges that would be in violation of that. If the State Board successfully completes this process that I described of developing an exception with special protections, that would then allow those discharges under the permit.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Last speaker, Curtis Weeks.
Chairman Young, members of the board, my name is Curtis Weeks. I'm the general manager of the Monterey County Water Resource Agency. And just so as not to confuse you with the discharge, and I want to call them communities. It seems like, you know, we call them dischargers, and we start to set up kind of an adversarial set of rhetoric and dialogue, and it doesn't help us. So you've asked question after question. Wait a minute, I'm going to back up. Our organization is essentially the county's, Monterey County's, consultant that's working with this group putting together the plan. So I'm here talking today as the general manager of the Water Resource Agency. And we're involved in all kinds of things, including a really complicated biological opinion with NOAA Fisheries on a project that looks to put enough water in the Salinas River to you know, effectively help the steelhead habitat. We're looking at some bioremediation in one of the reclamation ditches to start to address some of the nitrate issues and some of the impaired bodies of water. And I want to go to the collective part of this dialogue, the collective intelligence. For instance, the Salinas River may be one of those bodies of water that's impaired, but the reason why it's impaired primarily is because of nitrates. And the nitrates typically get into the Salinas River, especially the lagoon, during the summer months when there's no native flow. And the only flow in the river is coming in from ag drains. Now, during the rest of the year, or during this time of year when there's actual native flow, we got native flow in the Salinas River. We got maybe some sediment because it's kind of a sandy bottom river, but the water quality parameters are different than they are during the summer months. And you may not have known that, or the folks that are collecting the data may not have known that, unless we talk to each other. So I'm going to take Mr. Coburn's suggestion, and my recommendation is that we approve the permit. Then we use the regular meetings that this group has as a forum for all the NGOs, all of the concerned citizens, to sit down and work through the specifics. There's got to be trade-offs. There's got to be flexibilities woven into this thing. There's got to be priorities. And if there are, if this group can come together with the better set of priorities and make those decisions based upon the economics and the priorities, the things that will fit, and bring it to you and your board and your staff through a process, then I think we've got a win-win. But to sit here today and not to have the permit and to continue to discuss what we don't like about each other's proposals isn't going to get us anywhere except through appeals and processes. So my recommendation, again, is to approve the permit. And the ASB issue is kind of murky as well, and I'd like to have some clarity around that, and you probably would as well. So I'd like to hold that in abeyance, as we've recommended. But really work towards putting all of these organizations together, and we are working on some 218 provisions and other resource acquisition opportunities with the state board and with others for a number of different water projects. But I think the key is that we sit down together and work through those issues. Because otherwise, we're going to continue to be adversarial. And I believe if we sit down and we look what we have in common, look what our common objectives are, I don't think there's any city or any community that wants to see the quality of the bay degraded. I just don't think that's a fact. I think the fact is they want to keep the quality as the highest level possible. But I also think that we need to talk about what that means and what those practical levels are relative to those maximum extents.
You mean how much is it going to cost us?
Well, not only how much it costs, but what are we trying to do? One of the problems that I think we have is we have a lack of data on the whole system. I heard some interesting information today about otters. Well, otters, have got a complex web that they have to work within in terms of their food source, what kind of contaminants may get into that food source, how we might actually do some prevention ahead of it. But absent the information and absent the dialogue around that, we may not ever get there. And to just establish a series of water quality parameters or measures and metrics without really having any idea what they yield in terms of an outcome, it doesn't seem to make sense to me. It doesn't seem to be smart. What's smarter is for us to sit down and talk about what we want to achieve. I think Member Press had a good comment. Let's look at the outcomes. What are the outcomes that we want to have? And then let's back up and say, okay, how do we get to those outcomes? Mr. Briggs had a comment about the redevelopment in Monterey. Well, Monterey doesn't have any redevelopment, but Mr. Muir knows that. Mr. Briggs doesn't. I know that there's a lot of developments going to go on in the former Fort Ord, and we should be looking at really good construction permitting activities around that to prevent water quality issues in the development there. But those may not be the same fit for Monterey. So, I wouldn't sell short the synergy that we have here with working, in a regional context. And I certainly don't want to sell short the opportunity that we have in front of us to work together to resolve some of these things. I think we've got a great environment. I think everybody is here committed to making it a great environment, continuing to have success. But clearly, we've got some issues to work out. So, again, my request is let's approve the permit. Write it into your permit in the resolution that, we will meet or schedule workshops with all the NGOs. We'll make a list, send out the invitations, and have the dialogue and improve this permit.
Well, how about we do this? How about we continue this meeting and that we require that joint meeting take place in the next 30, 60 days or so, and that we try to get things hammered out as much as possible, and then we issue the permit or consider it in May.
Chairman Young, I don't want to be... I don't want to throw a wet blanket on that because I think that's a good idea. But I think it's going to take us more than one meeting. I want to be realistic about this. I think it's going to take us a series of meetings. So if we continue it, I wouldn't want to – well, maybe we continue until May and we see if we can have the meetings and hammer it out and come back to you. But I think to be realistic, it may take more than one or two meetings.
Okay.
I think there are some pretty thorny issues and we need to talk about them, clearly.
See, I see the board's role is really kind of the judge in this,
mm-hmm.
And we want staff to kind of work out the details of these things. We give staff direction. I gave, the NRDC and the Coastal Conservancy kind of a direction, at the last meeting last year. And, to their credit, they did it. they put together a very detailed plan. I feel somewhat remiss that I didn't give the communities a similar direction and say, you know, look carefully at what's going to come up from NRDC and Coastal Conservancy. Look at it from a cost basis, if that's going to be the issue, so that we can have a more intelligent discussion when we get to this point. I don't think we're at that point.
I would agree.
I'm not sure that the analysis has been done that satisfies MEP.
And I don't know that it's strictly a revenue issue or money. I think there's also the real issue of what's practical and what makes sense in certain areas. You know, what is going to achieve the outcome, and to take an outcome-based approach and look and say, okay, these are the outcomes that we want. Then let's back up and see what makes the most sense in terms of what this permit should do. We ought to have that dialogue. Because I don't know that just going out and doing numerical monitoring of water quality is going to get us to the otter situation, for instance. I don't know that just having a numerical number on weekly inspections of storm drains is the right thing to do either. But if we talk about, okay, what makes sense? You know, we've got a system here that typically gets rainfall in October. We ought to have a series of inspections on all the storm drains prior to that and clean them all. That makes sense. And we ought to do that. So, but we need to have the dialogue amongst the NGOs, the environmental concerns, the state board staff, the regional board staff, and our communities, and figure out how to put that together.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Jeffries.
I just have a couple questions, Curtis. Does your agency represent all the unincorporated areas of the county?
Yeah, we are.
Okay. The second question, do you not agree that monitoring is a key way to find the end results?
I'm going to use the royal monitoring, and that is that, yeah, we need to monitor. We need to set a metric for whatever it is we're going to achieve as an outcome.
Some kind of measurement to,
you bet,
define the success.
Right.
You agree?
Oh, I agree 100%, yeah. Numerical water quality monitoring isn't the only kind of monitoring, though.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah, but I agree.
There's several different ways of monitoring. It all depends on what the program is that you want to look at.
Exactly.
But
monitoring,
whatever that monitoring fits, then you agree that is a measurement of success, possibly, or a measurement of a way to find out if we're going the right direction?
Undoubtedly.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Press.
I guess this would be a comment for you as well as the all of the interested parties here. I was thinking as I was reading through the hundreds of pages here, you know it's bad when there's so many pages that we don't even get hard copy, that we only get electronic copy. That's, you know, you're in trouble when you have to bring your computer. and they say I assign too much reading. So I was thinking to myself, now, all right, what are the explanations, what possible explanations could there be for discrepancies between the NRDC plan and the Monterey plan? One difference could be, well, the NRDC proposals are too expensive. Another explanation could be, well, the NRDC proposals are not applicable in this particular region. A third explanation could be, well, the NRDC proposals are not the best ones. They're not the best the best BMPs. But a fourth one, which really is simmering below the surface here, and here's a theory. A fourth one is, well, they're just annoying us, and so we're not going to pay attention because we don't have a dialogue, and this is the adversary, and so we're not going to engage with that. I don't know what the explanations are. There's probably a mix of all of these. From my perspective on the board, I actually don't know that I want to parse out the the differences between each single BMP in this plan and that plan and go through one by one by one. I'm not sure. I don't really think that that's my role here, the board role. I think that what we need is a statement or a summation of a review by the parties of each other's proposals, a review that is as clearly linked to the factors that make up MEP as possible: economic, technical feasibility, and effectiveness. If I had that, if I had an analysis that came up from the stakeholders through the staff to the board that said, look, the suite of measures one, here's a comparison, here's how they rank on these three different factors, then we could see why there's common ground or why there's not common ground. But as it is, it's really a he said, she said thing. Personally, I don't see why that is such an onerous thing to ask, why it's so onerous to ask for the interested parties who now have developed extensive documents since last year to compare these and come back with us and say, okay, here's why we reach the conclusions we reach. So far, I have not seen the kind of why that I would need to feel confident. And it seems to me that that process, that analysis could be done probably in a few months, and then we could be back in May, I think. And then I would feel confident. I'd say, okay, MEP, rejected because 1, 2, 3. Or, yeah, okay, good because ABC. You know, it just...
Agree. I think we're starting to coalesce around a common theme that we need to talk about this, do the analysis, come up with a good set of evaluations, and come back to you, hopefully with a resolved...
Yeah,
plan.
I think, and I'm open to hearing the interested parties say, this BMP is rejected because it's too damn expensive. But I want to hear the rationale there.
But we should give you the trade-off too. We should be able to explain why we think it's too expensive and what we're doing to achieve the objectives.
I agree. Especially considering that it's also, when you say trade-off analysis, you heard this from the EPA. The EPA said, now, look, it's entirely possible and maybe even likely that communities and regions will prioritize. They will actually trade off, and they'll say, okay, if you do this for sea otters, it costs money, and then you can't do certain other things.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see that kind of more transparency in that kind of trade-off analysis. Maybe that's maybe those will be good trade-offs, especially if they're self-consciously made.
Okay, hang on one second. Lori, I think we can probably just get to where we're going to go with. I know what your concern is. Did you want to state it, or should we just talk about how we could continue this? I think we feel that we need some more information based on cost and MEP that needs to get into the record. You know, with the EPA letter, we'll come in at this point, and I know that the Monterey group didn't object to that if we continued the meeting anyway, so that's kind of a... water under the bridge at this point, but before we talk about maybe May, you know, I want us to set a high bar here. This is the first coastal permit for us, and you know, there may be others that are smaller, that are inland, that have gotten, you know, through because they weren't objected to or they weren't brought to a public meeting, but this coastline is very important to me also. I grew up in this region. and these are the best waters of the state. And we've got a great resource that has to be not only protected but restored. There's degradation there. It's not where it should be right now. And with the increase in population growth that's projected, that we can't control because of what Sacramento does with, you know, mandating things, we're really going to have to dig into this and make some really intentional inroads to it. And, you know, the language I saw that what was being proposed, and then I compared it to what NRDC was reflecting back, you know, like develop an education program and then revise the education program. You know, I would have thought that would have been okay until I saw how much is left out of that. It's like it's too gray. It's too fuzzy. I think we need to get the detail into it. I think we're all going to be better off if we do it at this point. And if there's some specific detail points that you feel in your group feels is just too costly again, then we can get into that, you know, discussion and sanction removing them. But we're not there yet. And so I don't want to go ahead and issue a permit for the sake of issuing a permit because someone feels that we need to get coverage. We'll continue this. And I guess if May, Roger, is the, we come back up here to Watsonville. Okay, staff. Okay, go ahead.
Just for some clarification, what list of BMPs would you like us to use for this analysis?
Well, I don't think it's a list of BMPs to use, per se. I think it's a way of analyzing what is being proposed.
And maybe okay, so just proposed from the NRDC group, is that what we're talking about? Or
yeah, I think actually, well, from the Monterey group itself, I think, you know, Ryan, your testimony was that you somewhat accepted their representation that something might be too costly. Or may not be cost effective.
Yeah, that leads to my next question is what is that economic number that we would want to use?
Yeah.
If I had the budgets for one of these communities, even if I had that, I don't know what number would be enough.
Okay, well,
I'm glad you're asking that.
And maybe Dr. Press can maybe clarify how staff might approach that task.
Well, first of all, it's I think, again, it's up to the stakeholders to propose a kind of viable economic analysis along with staff. If you're asking what kind of analysis I would do off the top of my head, it would have to be something that looked at comparable budgets, right? You don't want to just look at a city's budget and say, okay, the city has scarce resources. Everybody has scarce resources. The city allocates $275,000 to stormwater pollution prevention. How did it come up with that? Well, it has scarce resources, so that's what it devoted. You'd have to compare that to comparably sized cities. You'd have to have a per capita comparison, some kind of rudimentary economic analysis on the supply side, and then look at the cost of programs. And of course, if you tot up all of the most the kind of Cadillac version of all the programs, they're going to be way beyond any kind of budget that you could possibly field in this region. But the point is that when you start to present data like this in this way, different scenarios come out, different scenarios with different trade-offs come out, and justifications come out. You say, for example, that you know, if we do a public outreach plus a street sweeping based plus a manufacturer label based campaign on cat litter, it's going to cost this much money. And we may get some kind of benefit over here on the water quality side, but it'll be a very expensive program. So I'd like to see what that is. I'd like to see that the communities have made a conscious trade-off, or have at least explored what the trade-offs are when you have limited budgets. And in fact, when you do this sort of scenario building, you can build a kind of, you know, here's a scenario for current funding. Here's a scenario where you make you get a few more grants if Ms. Sheehan is successful, along with the other stakeholders. And that's scenario two. And then these are the programs that you add on and why, and so on. So there's much more transparency to unpack the practicable period part of it. Practicable, in my view, my reading of the law is that there's a part of that that's economic, and a part of that that is administrative, technical. So let's see that in a kind of analysis. I can't give you the template for the cost analysis. You guys have to look at how it's done or come up with it yourselves. But I don't think it would be super complex.
How about this? Certainly. Staff and the Monterey group could take the NRDC proposal at this point, and we could just assume, okay, that's the Cadillac, and we haven't seen what, you know, the Monterey group's cost based reaction to that is.
That's right. I'd like to see why would you reject the NRDC proposals? Well, you might reject them because, like I said, because they're too expensive, because they're not effective, because they're not technically feasible, because they don't apply to this region. So let's see that. 1, 2, 3, 4. Otherwise, adopt that.
Right. Otherwise, adopt that. So if there's a reason not to, that should be our starting point. And I know, Ryan, you're looking for a bright line test, like a dollar amount that maybe...
Well, it gets really difficult. And if another group comes up and suddenly that's no longer the Cadillac, another group can say...
Yeah. I don't think there's another group that's going to write another 90-page plan anytime soon.
But if they can rise to that, then why not go a little bit further? And where is that line
drawn,
right, I guess?
It's right now, they're the only designated party for this permit.
Actually, we don't have designated parties in this hearing.
We don't?
No.
Okay. What status do they have?
They're interested persons who did a lot of work commenting on last year's plan.
Okay. All right. I'm getting my hearings mixed up. But, another, I think, benchmark would be, you know, we don't even know what their budget is for doing these items in the context of public works. I mean, do they have a $10 million annual budget where they do street sweeping? Do they do certain things like this? Okay, collectively, you know, inspect for illicit discharges. And so if we looked at that, and then what NRDC is proposing as an overlay is going to double that budget, well, you know, then there's a problem there. And we may... You know, something may have to give. Now, we may get to the point where we just feel, you know what, these are important, and we want the standard to be set high enough, and the Monterey group is going to have to do something with funding to come up with it, because we're not going to lower the standard to let some of these things just go by.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You know, my experience being a former mayor, I understand where some of the cities are coming from. And sometimes, you know, it's easy for us to say, you know, we want you to do this, we don't look at the cost, and we expect you to do it. And we all know that in recent years that there's been a lot of funds that have been taken away from cities and counties, and they had no way to control that or stop that. And they had no other way to bring up any kind of sources of funding to replace those funds that were taken. Now, somewhere in time, those funds will probably, some of them will be restored to them eventually. I really didn't hear those folks saying, no, we don't want to do it. We need to know what the dollar amount's going to be and how is it justified. And to be in the defense of our staff, you know, I think, Mr. Chair, that the charge that this board gave our staff, I think they did what we told them to do, in all defense. I really appreciate what they have done. Now, Dr. Press alluded to all these documents. I was unfortunate that I didn't have electronics to get this. And I was unfortunate that I had a trip scheduled to Japan. So I had all this done in paper, and I carried this on a carry-on on a flight to Japan. And I read this going to Japan. Not only that, I cut my trip short a week to be here today. I flew in late last night from Japan, 22 hours in the air from my destination to here. We wouldn't have had a quorum today if I had not been here. So I think there's a lot of work been done by a whole lot of people. But I think that we need to set a time, and I think the main meeting is, I hate to postpone this any longer. It's been a year. It's been several years in the making. We need to give some direction, whether it's we give the permit and we look at it and come back and revisit it in a year and continue on with that and continue to massage it to make it better. But I also would like to ask our executive officer, Mr. Briggs, is there any dollars that we have available within our region that we could help in this, other than going to legislation, going to the State Water Board, and all those kind of things? Do we have any resources? And I'd like for you to, you don't have to answer that now, or maybe you already have the answer. But, you know, at least come back in the May meeting and see if there's any possibility we could assist some, not to pick up the whole cost. But in the meantime, then the cities, you know, you could say, Mr. Chair, I know you said, you know, they may have $250,000 in their budget to do stormwater. But who knows what's going to happen in a year where the state comes down and says, okay, we're going to take 10% of all cities and all county budgets. And that's going to, we need to take it to the state to utilize to keep the state operating. Well, then, you know, where do they go? Where do they, in the defense of these folks, how do they able to meet what we are requiring and also meet the requirements of their constituents in their own cities? So I think what I was trying to say earlier when we talked about how do you raise fees, sure, you can do TOT, you can raise business license, you can do this, you can do that. There's a whole multiple different things you can do. But I agree with Dr. Press. We need some kind of measurement, some kind of an analysis. We need the staff to come up. And I don't think they have the, I don't want to say they don't have the ability, but I don't think they have the way to analyze a city or a county budget to determine whether they have the funds or not. I think what their task should be done, should be, is to find out in their analysis what the cost would be to do monitoring or these other types of things, and then try to pass that, as Dr. Press and our chair has mentioned, to these folks and see how, what kind of compromise, even if we did water monitoring, you know, maybe it would be nice to do it 2-3 times a year, but maybe we could start out with one to see what the results is and then and build that up if it's necessary to do that. So what I'm saying, I'm trying to be sensitive to both sides. I like what the NRDC had to say. I like what some of what the city has done. I think that the staff has done what we instructed them to do. So with that, I think that with these new documents from the EPA and of course the marked up resolution that the cities haven't and the group hasn't had a chance to really analyze. Yeah, May would, but I don't want to go any further than May, Mr. Chair. I think
right.
I think we need to bring it back. I think that's enough time to do some preliminary analysis to see where we're going to go with this. And I don't want the staff spend time trying to look at a city budget, because even being on a city council, it's hard enough to understand it.
Well,
these directors of different departments, they camouflage everything in their budget. So.
Well, but
no, I'm just kidding.
But I think that gives us some basis of comparison.
Absolutely.
And I don't mean to get into nitpicking with specifics, but, you know, are we dealing with a $10 million budget or a a $5 million budget or a $250,000 budget, and then this BMP is going to cost us three times as much as this BMP. And you know what? We're going to get 90% of the result if we go with the one that's less expensive.
That's right.
That's a cost analysis that I think we need to get into.
May I point out there's going to be, this is Donette Dunn.
Yes.
There will be another piece that I can see coming up, more than just the cost of this BMP or that BMP, because this was raised earlier, which is the type of measurement that is required in the end. And as Ms. Okun pointed out, there are several levels of measurement or monitoring. We have been using those interchangeably that are may be required. Some, the kind of lowest level is just counting how many times do we sweep the street, the higher level being did we remove X type of pollutant from the water and at what degree did we remove it. This question will come up, I anticipate, and I think we're going to have this kind of discussion again, or I anticipate that we may. I want to put that in front of the board to think about.
With the other
as well.
Swamps?
All swamps. I mean, all, yes.
And is that what your comment
BMPs,
is?
Which BMPs are chosen and how often they are applied or what have you, and then how we are measuring the BMPs, the measurable goals. Those two questions I can see as being things that are going to be negotiated and things that may come before the board. And so I've heard your discussion about having an economic analysis of applying these BMPs, and I presume that we will have to have the same kind of discussion, analysis, and so on, depending on which measurable goals are chosen and how the measurable goals are chosen. So I want to place that in front of you. If you have any comments on that as well, please let us know. So that, okay. I guess maybe my question is, the view that I have and how I understand it is, in the interim stages of the permit application, as I understand it, EPA expects that there will be more of the lower level, if you will, type of measurements, just counting the number of times this BMP is applied, and then it will ramp up to actually measuring effectiveness, which may include water monitoring, water quality monitoring, may or may not include that. So there's going to be a decision gradient in there as well, and if there's any direction that you can give us on that, that would be highly helpful.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
First, on the financial information, I agree. We don't want staff looking at the budget and saying, well, if you close the libraries on Tuesday, you can have a better stormwater program. We don't need a formal cost-benefit analysis, but we do have specific criticisms of the swamp that more could be done, and the response was, well, that's too expensive. And when both sides were asked, where's the evidence of that, there was nothing. So the board does have a lot of discretion, but if there is a justification for rejecting BMPs or for saying that we can do 5% inspections instead of 20% or 50%, there has to be some evidence of the cost. That's all I'll say on that. The other thing is some of these issues about measurable goals and the monitoring program, it doesn't all have to be worked out in May. There's some specific things that EPA's pointed out, that NRDC's pointed out, that I think do need to be resolved, and the costs do need to be considered. And some of them are fairly straightforward, and the swamp could be approved as long as those decisions are supported. And then the monitoring program can be changed at any time. The executive officer can change it, or the board can change it. The board can require changes to the swamp at any time. So if the measurable goals are set at a lower level for the first year so we can get permit coverage to commence so they can start complying and require revisions to those in later years, that would be one way to handle it. So it's up to the board, but we don't have to solve everything by May.
Okay. Well, I do want to solve some things by May.
I agree.
Because, you know, it's unlikely that the board itself is going to want to bring something like this back to it, so I'd rather really put in our due diligence right now to get it to where we can get it and then not have to worry about that. Before Mr. Beckman
Oh, I thought I'd weigh in. I realize that, resources in terms of money, time, manpower, and so forth are finite. So given that that's so, I think in the course of the discussion, several things. One is you need measurable, prioritized goals, given you can't do everything. And two is you need some way to measure whether those goals or objectives are being met. And I would suggest that it came to my mind, we're all talking about monies for example, monitoring. But there are other groups out there, I believe the Marine Sanctuary monitors, and perhaps some of their monitoring yardsticks are appropriate to wastewater, stormwater runoff. And so they may be doing the monitoring, but it would be the responsibility of the discharger to ensure the quality of that monitoring. In other words, just because you have a monitoring plan, just because you're required to provide monitoring information doesn't necessarily mean that you have to actually do the monitoring, if that follows. And the third thing is I'm very in favor of a continuance because I think reading in the EPA document will save us in the long run a lot of time.
All right, so you're in favor if we continue it to May?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Beckman, you have some comments?
If you wouldn't mind just sure. listening to everybody and to give all of us the chance to do this in the best way, I have a suggestion of how you might conclude this, at least for your consideration today, sort of taking notes and also recognizing that we tried this once before and we don't want to all, you know, have the same experience, that you could pass a motion today that would continue this for 90 days, that you would state, as you did, Mr. Chairman, that the EPA comments and the NRDC Ocean Conservancy Plan is a presumptive plan that the dischargers or staff should do unless they want to review it and explain what the issues are they might have with it. After they've done that, what they'd hopefully do in a month or 45 days, then the parties could meet and they could explain what the problems are with our plan, if there are any problems with our plan. We work with one of the best stormwater experts in the country, Dr. Richard Horner. We'll bring him down. We can meet for a day or 2 days, 3 days, whatever it takes. And then at the end, what you guys would get as a staff report, or I don't know if it's a staff report, but you'd get a clear delineation of what the parties agree about, what they don't, and what the contending views are about what we don't agree, so that you could go down and look at what the issues are before you, and then you could, you know, make a decision. Well, what I'd hate to see happen is for us to go into this process and to have a difficult time getting a meeting with people like we did over the last 4 months.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I don't recommend the board adopt anything as a presumptive plan. I think the directions to staff and to the dischargers is pretty clear already.
Right.
In terms of ordering people to meet, I don't think you have jurisdiction to order people to have a meeting, but we could set up a workshop and...
Well, I think what I would like to do is suggest that, of course, the board can't be there anyway, right? So it's just going to be staff. And are you going to be there, Ms. Okun?
Yeah.
Yeah. My sense is we may need at least... that the group may need one or two meetings to go through this. Yeah, I mean, just I hope staff can work something in. We're in February, and we've got, you know, kind of March and April, and to get successive meetings in. I would think after a couple of go-arounds, we might at least get it to a point where the board can act more as a judge with this instead of getting into too much of the details of it. So, Mr. Briggs, what...
Well,
and I know you have nothing else to do between now and March 23rd or March 24th.
Right. So. One of the points I was going to make is that May sounds like it's semi-long way off, but our materials are supposed to be put together actually around the first part of April. So we really only have a little more than a month before we're supposed to put our materials together, and then those are mailed out 3 weeks prior to the board meeting. So there's very little time in terms of large changes for the May meeting. But I think if it's understood in terms of trying to narrow it down to the aspects that we talked about just a minute ago, with the understanding that, as Ms. Okun said, things like the monitoring program can be changed down the road, and the swamp itself can be changed down the road. You know, if we don't expect everyone to hold hands and sing kumbaya, as a board member might say, then, you know, don't expect perfection, then it's probably doable. And I think we ought to beware of basing our permit effectiveness too much on just how many dollars it is and how many dollars per capita, because theoretically, you know, you could have a very environmentally conscious community that does the right thing and has a very inexpensive stormwater management plan that is more effective and has cleaner runoff than any other community around. So we got to be a little careful about that. But I understand that to the extent that the Monterey Regional folks are saying, well, we can't do more inspections because it costs too much and that sort of thing, then that does beg the question, well, why is that? But I think we really need to look at it, the economics on a cumulative scale. As Mr. Muir said, I think he said we're spending $1.6 million per year. We could compare that and to other cities or on a per capita basis or that sort of thing, get some gross indication. But that should not be the standard. The real standard should be the effectiveness of the permit. And I really appreciate what you said in terms of, you know, there could be a BMP that gets 90% of the job done and costs 10% or however you phrased it, right, and that would be the way to go.
Right.
So I think if that's understood, we can do the best we can for May, but just want you to recognize there are really just a handful of weeks available to do that.
Well, and I'm aware of that, and my concern is that we not get to the point where, you know, we have this stuff coming in at the last minute, which is still kind of replying to what was put together before.
Right.
And so that's why I was hoping, at least with a workshop or two, that this stuff can be kind of distilled out to where the parties agree to disagree. Basically, if you can get it to that point, we agree to disagree on these BMPs or the level of detail in these BMPs because of these reasons. And then that's what the board can kind of review. That would be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to get a staff report maybe 3 weeks before the hearing and then have NRDC, you know, feel that, well, they're going to want to respond to that anyway, I guess. But I would like that staff report to be the outgrowth of maybe the second workshop,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And NRDC or whoever wants to comment on what was distilled out after a couple of workshops makes sense. But is EPA still with us?
No.
Okay, that was them going offline, yeah. Let's get them in the loop earlier, okay? So we don't have any last-minute surprises. What's that, Mr. Beckman?
How long are you proposing before this is back?
Well, in May, and in Watsonville.
In May?
Yeah,
okay.
So we've got, 3 months? And, you know, with the that's going to happen very quickly.
Mr. Chair, do you need a... Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say that, you know, in my experience with these permits, if people are motivated to strike a deal because you want them to, they will, and it won't take that long. So I think that can easily be done by May.
Good. Okay.
Do you need a motion for the continuance?
We don't. We've given direction, I think, to staff. Does staff have any questions on filling in any of the blanks? You know, if you do, you can... I guess have Mr. Briggs contact the chair for what his thoughts are in terms of what the board might want to see happen. That I could fill you in.
Do you want to put any limits on what new evidence comes in, or?
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point, because this will be just a continuation of this hearing. So, what's that, Mr. Jeffries? How can we?
I would say the cutoff's been, but you can give direction, or as the chair, you can accept the EPA's letter. That's your discretion.
Well, that is coming in. Yeah.
But that was a late letter, but right. I think it's your discretion to accept that in
right.
now.
Yeah,
I surely wouldn't want any more documents coming in. I think we have enough.
Well, obviously, we need cost information.
Yeah, you're asking for cost information.
But other than that.
But I don't want an 80-page document from some organization that they now have comments.
Right. Well, I think what's going to happen is we'll have a couple of workshops. There'll be a staff report that'll tell us where the parties kind of got to. And then we're going to have comments on that staff report by the entities.
But we have, what, two meetings between now and May, Mr. Briggs?
One.
March 23rd, 24th.
Yeah. Well, then we can have a status report from the staff and where they are at
right.
that point in time.
Right.
You know what? So, and
if anybody doesn't want to show up at the meeting, you know how it goes. If you're not there, you get elected or you pay the bill, one of the two. So I would think that all parties would be at these workshops to get their analysis in there.
And
Ms. Okun.
On Dr. Press's question, I actually can't remember if we need a motion to continue or not, so we might as well have one.
Okay, well, then I'll move to continue this meeting to May.
Okay, to the May meeting?
The May meeting.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. I think we're done for this evening.
Okay. Thank you. Do any of you have Bruce Daniels' cell phone number?
Yeah.
Because they're supposed to be at the restaurant. Oh, it's...
Well, it's at 6:30, though.
Oh, 6:30. I guess we're okay.
We're okay.
Yeah.
Does everybody know where to go?
I was thinking 6.
Is it walking distance?
No.
It's a long... I've got directions
in the
car.
It's a long walk.
There are going to be two representatives from Russ Pratt here tomorrow. If they don't want to... What this is a letter that you sent. I'll give this to you. Because you CC'd a copy of it to me. They want to talk to you not in front of the board. They just want to talk to you off to the side about their costs on staff. They're just not...
Let me think about
the cost recovery visit?
Yeah.
Well, I told them, they called me yesterday late, when I just barely walked in the house, and said, it's an item 18.